very happy to be here. It's good to see all that has gathered here. I've been to Eufaula many times. It's one of my favorite places. Most of the time when I come down, I got a boat hook behind my truck, and I'm out here in this water. That is one fine hole of water to catch fish in. And I got a lot of memories about this lake. There's a lot of nice alligators in it. Alligators won't bother you. Crocodiles, I was telling you, crocodiles are the ones that bother you. They're over in Africa. And they have killed several of our brethren over there. But the alligators don't seem to bother you. You just leave them alone and they're fine. I'll tell you this, I was fishing down here. It's been, I can't remember exactly when it was, it's been 2 or 3 years ago. And we caught them at the right time. The fish were just biting good. And I was throwing spinnerbait. There's two creeks down the lake. One's called Shag Nasty and one Drag Nasty Creek. And I was in Shag Nasty Creek, standing in the front of my boat and throwing spinnerbait. And it was overcast. And I was catching some good fish. And there was this black guy on the bank. And he looked at me and hollered at me. He said, "Mister," he said, "it sure do hurt my eyes to see them fish go back in that lake." he was hungry. He wanted to feel bad that I didn't give him one or two. We always put them back. But that's another story, another time. We're going to do some fishing this morning. I hope we'll throw out a line and get a bite or two. I've been asked to speak upon the subject of forgive and forget. And I hope I can say something that will help us to understand, forgive and forget. You know, forget is not a problem to understand it. I usually get in my truck and drive away from the house and realize I forgot my phone. My wife had about forgetting her instrument when we were before all. It's a pretty simple thing to understand, but forgive is a little different. Some say that it's impossible to forgive and forget. And some say, "I will forgive you, but I will never forget." And then there's others that say, "Well, you're supposed to remember these things that were done against you and learn a lesson from what you have suffered, even though you have forgiven the one that has wronged you." Then there's some that say that unless you try to forget, then you really haven't forgiven. So I want to bring to your attention a few things that forgiveness is not, and then that'll help us understand a little more what forgiveness really is. You know, there's some say, "Well, you know, it's okay. This is a favorite line. Nobody's perfect. Everybody makes mistakes. You know, it's really not a big deal to me." And I think that's wrong. Yes, it is a big deal. It is a big deal because it's so big that Christ died for it, didn't he? Jesus died for it on the cross. So we don't want to dishonor the cross by saying, you know, just diminishing sin and saying, "Well, it's no big deal." No, it required the death of Christ. So it's very important. Another thing that forgiveness is not, and it's not denying a wrongdoing. When somebody does something to us, we don't say, "Well, you know, it really didn't happen. I forgot all about it. And, you know, I'm just going to move on." Well, you know, maybe you pretend like it never happened. I've heard people say, "I'm just not letting it affect me." And I think I've said that before in some of these other things, statements too. You know, I'm just not going to let it bother me. But that's not true. Forgiveness is not a denial of a wrongdoing that somebody might have done. Forgiveness is not denying that somebody has sinned against you. Another thing is that forgiveness is not. Forgiveness is not waiting for an apology. You know, some say, "Well, I will forgive them whenever they apologize and say I'm sorry." Well, I hate to give you the bad news, but there's going to be a lot of people that just won't ever apologize. They will never say that I'm wrong. Some people are going to continue in their destructive ways, their rebellious ways, their foolish life that they might be living, and they're going to be stubborn, self-righteous, and they're never going to admit or confess that they were wrong. You know, it's just not going to happen. Some may move away. People may move away. They may die, you know, before they ever apologize. So, from a Christian standpoint, how do we look at it? You know, I could be wrong, but from what I understand of the Scriptures, I feel like that we should forgive even without an apology. And I take that from Luke 15th chapter, story about the prodigal son. Luke 15th chapter, 11 through 24. And I'm not going to read those verses, but y'all, I'm sure, have read it and you know the story. It's about the father that had the two sons. One son, he got up to an age and he got kind of rebellious, and he wanted his inheritance. He wanted his father to give him all that was owed him. And he did. His father gave him his inheritance, and he took off. And he went, and when he left, he squandered all of his inheritance. He lost it all. He wound up in a pig pen, eating with hogs, eating slops. And that's when he realized that he'd made a big mistake. But can you imagine how his father might have felt when all this went down? Anyway, you know, he realized that his slaves that his father had, the slaves that his father had, was eating better than him. So he decided he was going to go back and correct that situation. He was going to go back and ask his father just to make him a slave. And that way he'd at least have better food than what he was getting. But the whole story to me, and I may be missing it, I may totally be missing it, but you know, you may see something different. But here's a man, I kind of relate this to myself. If my son was like that, how would I feel? Would I, when I saw him coming back, would I close the door? Would I look the other way and refuse to let him in? He wronged him bad. I mean, he'd done a lot to it. But his father didn't. He saw him coming, and he took off and run to him and fell on him, and he kissed him before the man ever apologized. Didn't he? He did. See? So the lesson that I get from it, even though they don't apologize, if they mend their ways, you know, you need to forgive. I think that's what it is. Forgiveness is not waiting on an apology. Not always. Forgiveness also is not forgiving. You know, this is one of the big Christian myths that goes around. Well, we need to forgive and forgive. No, we don't. We don't. You can't. I'm going to say you cannot forgive and forgive. You can forgive, but you can't forgive. You take this, for instance. This is just one situation. Say a woman is broken into her apartment or house or where she's at. She's brutally raped, beaten by a person, and just done all sort of evil things against her. Is she supposed to forgive her? No, she can't forgive. It's impossible. You know, we have home break-ins now. Every time you turn your TV on and you see the news, somebody's broke in a home and they tied a person up, or either they killed them or brutally beat them. You know, are these people going to forget that? No. You know, at some point in time in their life, they can forgive these people, but they are not going to forgive them. It just is totally not going to happen. Not like these digital cameras we got. You take a picture and delete it, and it's gone. On your computer, you can delete something, it's still there. I think our life's like that. I mean, you delete it out of your mind or try to, but at some point in time, it's going to pop back up. It's going to be there. And there's a lot of people that use the Scriptures to say that you are to forget, like over Jeremiah, where God said he'd remember their sins no more. Also in the New Testament, the Scripture that says that. But that's not true. Does God forget that? Does he just blank that out? I want to tell you this. God doesn't forget nothing. He's not going to forget it. He's omniscient, and he is an all-knowing God, and he forgets nothing. It's not like God is up in heaven walking around and saying, man, I can't remember what they did yesterday. That's not it. So what does it mean? What does it mean that God remembers their sins no more? Well, it means based upon their obedience to God, to God's will, that he will forgive them their wrongs through the shedding of the blood of His Son, Jesus Christ, and He'll remember them no more. That means He blots them out. He takes them out of your record. You know, upon your repentance, you'll not bring the past sins up again. And they're gone from your record. What it means, I believe, that at the forefront of God's thinking towards us, that He's not, the sins that we commit, that's not the main thing. If we are righteous, then what it is the work that we can do through Jesus Christ and by His grace, by His love that He sees. See, it's not like God has no idea what He did yesterday. You know, He forgets nothing. Sometimes where a person might say that, you sin against another person, maybe they'll say, well, you shouldn't ever remember that again. You know, you should block that out and never remember it again. It's impossible. Impossible to do. Something else about forgiveness, that forgiveness is not, trusting. It's not of trust. I reckon that's to be the way to put it. I've heard it before that my husband or my boyfriend, he beat on me. He just was really brutal. He did just terrible to me. Well, they asked the question, well, do I just take up when he apologized and says I'm sorry? Do I just take up where we left off and keep going? No. I say no, I don't think so. You shouldn't just pick up where you left off. See, what it is, you need to let trust be built up. You have to wait for them to prove themselves. See, trust is built real slowly, but it's lost quickly. And whenever somebody does something like that, then it takes time, over a period of time, for trust to be built up or to be built up again. Someone that sins against you grievously, trust can be, rebuilt over a period of time. Some people can be trusted in time by the fruit of their labor and keeping with repentance after they've maybe gotten help. But then there's other people that can never be trusted because of the risk that might be involved. You know, I'm sure that each one of you have been hearing about the coach that Sandusky that has been accused of all these bad things with young boys. You know, I got to thinking about that, about trust. Say he admits that he was wrong. And the daughter, if he's got a daughter and they had grandkids, they got up in the age with those grandkids, would that daughter feel good for them grandkids to go spend a week or two with them, with him? I don't think so. No. You know, see, this is situations like this take time, and he has to prove his sincerity. And that's the same way it is in a lot of other cases. I'm going to tell you, this subject can be debated over and over and take days because forgiveness is really a deep subject. Forgetting, well, that's a pretty quick and simple thing. But I want us to look at some things that the word forgiveness means. And I'm going to tell you this. Here lately, I've done a lot of study on this subject in the past, and I dug into it and for lessons or just for clear conscience. I spent a great deal of time trying to look at what forgiveness really is through God's Word and through Christ's example. And I think that's where we need to go and see exactly how we're going to go about this forgiving others. So from this, what I gathered together in my mind, I want to share with you just a little bit of it. And if it's not what you think, let me know, because it won't offend me at all. I'm going to tell you, I know people speaking my mind and saying what comes to it. I don't hold back too much. So anyway, I'm going to let you know what I feel about it. You know, people who have a hard time forgiving others, I feel like they don't want to talk about it. Really, they don't. They don't want to talk about it. Whether it's a control issue or just a matter of need to hold on to something that I don't know, people who hold a grudge want to feel justified in what they're doing. You know, if they let go of the animosity that they have towards a person who has caused them pain or suffering or done something they think is wrong, they feel like that maybe they're taking a big risk, that they feel safer just to harbor these ill wills than to let them go and forgive. You know, people who do not have a hard time forgiving, I want to tell you this. You know, when you don't have a hard time forgiving other people, for some reason or another, consider you to be weak. They think that you're weak. It's especially true of a non-forgiving crowd of people. Yes, the people who don't like to, you know, who don't like you because you forgive, they feel like that they're more shrewd than the one that forgives. So the idea is this: if it's a disadvantage to being a forgiver, it's one that you're going to possibly be hurt over and over and over by those that seem to want to empower themselves. I'm going to tell you this. I thought this was a pretty good little saying, and it's so true. The capacity one has to forgive is equivalent for the capacity one has to love. Let me say that again. The capacity one has to forgive is equivalent for the capacity one has to love. People who are not forgiving, they're missing out on one of the greatest aspects of love. You know, in some sense of the word, they are shutting out a part of the love of God out of their lives. Jesus said that the woman over in Luke 7:37 and 47, he said there about the woman that washed his feet with the tears. It says, her sins, which are many, are forgiven. For she loved much, but to whom little is forgiven, the same loves little. We understand that last part, but to whom little is forgiven, the same loves little. You know, we're going to forgive more when we, in our daily life, when we are constantly thinking about God and how much He has forgiven us. You think about it. Here we are, we're just an old sinful person, a sinful people, walking around on this earth, and we're doing things constantly. Every one of us, all of us, we're doing some things that are wrong. None of us are perfect. And whenever we get to thinking about the grace of God, that He sent His Son here to die for us, if we think about that, and when He says, Father, forgive them, for I know not what they do, it's going to make it a whole lot easier for us to forgive these things that others commit against us. I think it will. You know, we just need to really keep that in our mind. Jesus was very open to forgiveness. You know, really, you could say that He mastered the art of it. He didn't consider it as a weakness in His life. He considered it as a strength. It was not a risk. It was an opportunity. It was not a struggle for Him. You know, because of the fact of His capacity that He had to love humanity. And we're to have that too. See, if we have that love, part of that love, which Jesus had, when He said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what to do, put them to death. We just have a little bit of that. One drop out of the bucket. It would really help us when we have problems with others. See, when you refuse to forgive someone, you're not hurting the one that you're not forgiving. You know, you're hurting yourself. Think about it. You are. And I tried my best to come up with some idea as to what I could use an example of that. And I kind of got to thinking about my life. I'm highly allergic to bees. I'm not afraid of them. I ought to be, but I'm not. But they sting me, one, and my head will swell, and I'll break out all over my body, and I have an E-pen to give me a shot, and if three or four sting me, I better get to the hospital. But when one stings me, he can sting me on my foot, and I feel that poison coming up and coming coming on my body. And I got to thinking, you know, that forgiveness is somewhat like that. It's like you've been bit with an insect or, say, a snake, and that venom's coming up, and you release it and get it out of your body, how much better you would feel. Well, that might be a bad example, but, you know, that's my idea. Whenever you forgive, you release all that poison that's within your system about someone else. You know, forgiveness quotes. I went online and in studying this a while back, and I pulled up some quotes by other people. And I copied down about five of them that I want to share with you because I think that it helps us to understand a little better how we are to forgive and forgive. Bryant H. McGill, it says there is no love, there is no love without forgiveness, and there is no forgiveness without love. There's no love without forgiveness, and there's no forgiveness without love. Robert Muller, to forgive is the highest, most beautiful form of love. In return, you receive untold peace and happiness. Robert Smead, I thought this was real good. To forgive is to set a prisoner free and discover that prisoner was you. Very good. And this other lady's name here, Gan Hai, I can't pronounce her first name, but the weak can never forgive. Forgiveness is an attribute of the strong. I think those statements are very, very plain and describe to us a portion of what forgiveness really is. I know that every one of us at some point in time have had a problem with someone. We've had a problem, a falling out. Maybe they've done something to us and, you know, anger fills our heart and we felt like that we could never forgive and forgive. I know I've been in that situation. It may have been a brother, a sister, a parent, or someone at school, a business partner, you know, a neighbor, or whoever it might be. It might just be a simple acquaintance. But I want to tell you this little story that I copied too that I think describes this. Robert Louis Stevenson, in one of his books, he tells a story about two sisters that were never married. Not sisters in the church, but two blood sisters. They never married and they lived together in the same house. But they came to a falling out with one another and they decided never to speak to one another again. So, with a piece of chalk, they divided every area of that house. They took that piece of chalk and they drew a line right over the sofa, down through the floor in the living room, through the dining room, through the kitchen, even through the hallways. And with this piece of chalk, they divided that house. The two women lived the rest of their lives imprisoned in bitterness. One didn't cross over the line. One was one side, the other side was the other. They didn't cross over. They lived their complete life. They wouldn't even acknowledge that the other one was there, their presence. And with this piece of chalk, they marked each other out of their lives. You know, it brings to mind that people today are still using that chalk. They're drawing lines. Perhaps you don't see them. You may not see the line, but they're there. They are. Words so many times are carelessly spoken. Deeds that are done that offend, something real or imagined happens, and the result is this: I don't want any more to do with you, period. I am drawing this line, and I don't want you to come on my side. I'm going to stay away. You stay on that side, and I'll stay on the other. This happens in just about every aspect of relationships. In the marriage, the family, jobs, associations, wherever, happens in neighborhoods and so forth. And the sad part about it is, many times it happens in the church. And that's something that is terrible. In Matthew 18 and 15, in the King James Version, Jesus says, if a brother trespasses against you, trespass means in my idea and understanding, it's coming across that line. In other words, you're on my side of this line. You need to get back on yours. They trespass against you. They've infringed upon maybe my rights. This is private territory. You stay on your side. You've come a little bit too far. But Jesus says that the followers are supposed, his followers are supposed to act differently. They're not supposed to draw these barriers and put these chalk lines down. And you're supposed to handle bitterness and anger and hostility different from the way that the worldly people handle them. And if we don't learn these lessons, then it means that we really haven't learned what it means to be a Christian. Charles Swindle wrote this, and it says, and I thought it was worth reading to you. It's so true. As a Christian, I give up my privilege of hurting you because you hurt me. I give up my privilege of retaliating, of seeking revenge. I give up my privilege of nursing a grudge. It is true. You really did hurt me. I am not imagining it. But because I am a Christian, I give up my privilege of hurting you in return. Those are so true of words. And with this in mind, look at what Jesus said in Matthew 18, 21 and 35. It says there, then came Peter to him and said, Lord, how often shall thy brother sin against me? And I forgive him till seven times. Jesus saith unto him, I say not unto thee until seven times, but until 70 times seven. It says, therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a king who built and settled his account with his servants. And as he began to settle, you know, this man owed him 10,000 talents. You know, 10,000 talents is a lot of money. That's equivalent to 10 million dollars now by the time the man. I don't know how he got access to all of that. Maybe he was working for him as a tax collector or whatever. But anyway, it was an unpayable amount. And you know the story. You know, he was forgiven. He fell down and begged to have patience and with his master that he could try to pay it. And he forgave him that. But then, yet he turned around and went out and somebody owed him 100 pence, you know, which is, what, $15? No, he grabbed him and choked him and put him in prison over there. So the lesson for us is, you know, our Father has forgiven us. He has. And we have to be of a forgiving nature, forgiving spirit. Now, the question is, can you ever really forgive and forgive? As we grow older, I don't know whether I learn more, you know, as I grow older. What have you, but as we grow older, we obtain certain flaws in our life. Now, by flaws, I don't mean bad things, but there's just certain things that happen to us as we grow older, and we never can stay perfect. You know, if we was perfect, then that'd be a first, because nobody's perfect. We all sin, but we have these little flaws, and I reckon you would look at it like this. You know, a new car. I go buy a new car, and boy, it's nice. Haven't bought one in a while, but I'm bad about driving one till it just wears completely out. But when you get it, it's so nice. You don't want scratch put on it. You go to the shopping center, Walmart, and you park at the far end of the parking lot. You listen to the wife fuss because you park far away, and I don't want a scratch on it. And you know, it's just. It's just one of them things. You baby it, you love it. And all of a sudden, you get a scratch on it, you know. Boy, how perfect it would be if you could go through life and buy something new like a car and never get a scratch on it. It would stay new all the time. But after buying this new car, you know, things happen. And whenever this happens to it, you know, it's really... Then it kind of becomes not your new car anymore. It just becomes your car. And when this flaw happens to it, and you kind of see it in a different light. The first dent that you have, you get a dent on it, you're going to take it and have it repaired. And when you have it repaired, you retouched up the paint. Is that it? Do you forget it? Well, it looks better. You start using it, and it's your car. But, you know, when you got a battered grocer, you're walking back to the car, and you got it dented on the right or left quarter panel, you know, you'll always look at it. You'll look, and you remember that, see? It's always going to be there. And it's just hard to get these flaws out of your life. You'll never feel the same about your automobile after you get a dent or two on it and it gets damaged. But what about in your relationship with other people? See, when you meet somebody and you think you've met the perfect person, you know, you're fooling yourself. Somewhere down the road, somewhere down life's journey, something's going to happen. You're going to see a little flaw in them. There'll be something you don't like. And unless you are willing to look at it like your automobile, for instance, you take it, you're going to get it repaired, and you know, whatever it takes, you get it fixed back up. That's the way we should be with our relationship. You know, if we put the same amount of effort into repairing our personal relationship with our brother, sister, our neighbor, our friend, whoever it is, then it'd be a whole lot easier. The problem is that, as with relationships with people, there's a lot of people that are very picky and choosy about their cars. They are. They sell their cars, and they see a new car, they want another one, and they leave that one behind, they send it off to the junkyard, or sell it, trade it, they don't care about it anymore. You know, those people do the same way with people. They have these friends for a while, and then these flaws come along, and they're not big enough and gracious enough to overlook the flaws that are in these people, and they push them off, and they leave them, and won't have anything to do with them. They feel that it's over with, and they don't take the time and the effort to try to repair these situations with others. You know, we must learn to repair flaws in our relationship and put them behind us, just like the car. It can be done. It can be repaired. Most of the time, you can repair a car. Sometimes, you have one that is in the situation where you got to take it to the junkyard, really. You know, we have cars that are in accidents and get real bad, and that happens, too, in situations. You know, and I've seen some that were just, I feel like, that was just unrepairable. But in my heart, we still need to forgive. Where there is those situations that are repairable, we need to work hard and put all our effort into doing the best that we can to repair these situations, because that is what God expects us to do. That is what a Christian life is about. That's it. Bottom line. One of the things that I want to leave you with, don't forget. You can't forget things that happen. It's a matter of how you forget. See, when we remember God's grace and His forgiveness for us, as we go through life, this 7 times 7, forgetting over and over and over, is a continual thing with us. You know, we see somebody and they've done something. Say Brother Herman here done something bad to me, and he asked me to forgive him, and I forgive him, and then I don't forget it. But as I think of, when I see him, it may come up again. But this continual forgiveness is in our mind, thinking back on the cross. If our mind is filled with Christ and what He has done for us, then we'll remember, oh, I was so bad, and He forgave me. You know, don't ever bring it up. Don't ever bring it up. It's like Christ. When He forgives us, you're not going to bring it up again. It's over with. If you do it again, you know, then there might be a situation there where we've got to go and ask Him again. And He will forgive us again. That's my remarks. I hope that I've said something that will be helpful to each and every one. Thank you for your kind attention. And I'll turn it back over to Brother Mike.
Thank you, Brother Daniel.